The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Kia ora, I'm Senga and welcome to Heritage South, the show connecting Southlanders to their heritage and where we talk heritage happenings here in the South. Our last episode showcased just a few of the stories of the old D Street Hospital, and it seems fitting to invite Dr. Sally Dobbs to join me to talk about some of our pioneer nurses in Southland, particularly those who played their part in conflicts in the late 19th and early 20th century. We were really lucky we had Sally join us for Heritage Month, where she talked about these nurses, and then more recently at the stories of Southland Encore Korero season. Sally is retired from her role at SIT, but she was a career nurse working as an army nurse for 16 years, and she's still a reservist nursing officer in the Royal New Zealand Nursing Corps. So welcome along to Heritage South, Sally.
Kia ora, Senga. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm really excited to be able to have you here. We've been talking for a while about having you join me, so it's great that we could put our diaries together and make it happen. What I find interesting, and it just seems a given today, that nursing is seen as a profession, that our nurses are very well respected, and it is a great profession to be in, but that wasn't always the case, was it?
It certainly wasn't, Senga, and it's quite interesting to think that we know of Florence Nightingale and how she was the nurse who went to the Crimea and then established a nursing school in London. But prior to Florence's work, nurses were actually prostitutes, people sleeping on the streets. So when she told her parents in a very middle-class family in Hampshire that she was going to become a nurse, you can imagine how horrified they were. But she had the calling from God and felt that this was her purpose in life, to actually care for the sick and wounded. So Florence took 38 women with her to the Crimea and had to cope with quite a few discipline issues with the women. But of course, from those early days in 1854, we now have a profession which women are proud to say, and men, of course, we are proud to be nurses. And just in that period of time, Florence has revolutionised the nursing profession as we know it today.
Because, of course, the time period that we're talking about, men weren't nurses. So we are actually, at this point in time, we're talking about females, aren't we?
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, those 38 women were women. Although, I mean, if you look back further in history, monks did a lot of the caring. So there is some male history in where we've arrived at today. Mm. Yeah.
So I guess, when we've talked before, you've expressed this real passion for our Southland nurses. So what led to that? Why have you gone into this research into our Southland nurses?
Yeah, thanks. So I actually trained at the Nightingale School in London, which was the school that Florence Nightingale founded at St. Thomas's Hospital. So history for me and the nursing profession was almost ingrained in me because of where I trained. And then joining the military, the British Army, again, we had to learn our roots about where nursing had come from. And I came over to New Zealand in 2008 and joined the reservists in 2010. And I remember standing at the Cenotaph in Invercargill on Anzac Day, and all the speeches, all the prayers, everything was about the men that had gone to war. And standing at attention as a woman in uniform, I kept thinking, when are we going to acknowledge the women? When are we going to acknowledge the women? So that became my mission from then on, to actually look at the role that women, nurses and Southland had contributed. And I stayed with the First World War because actually I found there was an awful lot of history around that period. So from the Boer War to the First World War. So that's where my research has been.
So of course,
focused.
Those the first of the New Zealand nurses that was sent overseas was during the Boer War at the very end of the 19th century. And I believe there were about 31 nurses that were sent from New Zealand, and seven of those were from Otago in Southland.
Yes.
I looked at some of the research that you've done, and I could see that one of the Southland nurses, Doris Piper, was actually mentioned in dispatches,
yes.
Lord Kitchener's dispatches.
Yep.
So she obviously distinguished herself.
She very much did something very special to get that honour. At the moment, my research hasn't been able to find out what she got that for, but mentioned in dispatches or MIDs are not given out lightly. So it's great to see an Invercargill nurse was recognised in the Boer War.
It's wonderful. Of course, 1901 is when nursing became a recognised profession.
Mm.
And I'm delighted to be able to say that New Zealand was the first country in the world to recognise regulations
yes.
for that profession. But of course, as you said, the next conflict that New Zealand nurses served in was World War One. And how many nurses did we send then?
So it's really hard to get an accurate number because a lot of the nurses joined either the Australian Army or the British Queen Alexandra's Imperial Military Nursing Service. But we do know there's around about 660 or approximately New Zealand nurses who served in the First World War.
That's quite the number, isn't it?
Well, it is when you think that the population at the time was 1 million. So proportionally, you know, there were a lot of women who went to serve in the First World War overseas.
Now, we're going to focus the rest of our chat on just two of these nurses. The first one that came up for me that I was quite intrigued by is a woman called Jessie McLeod. Now, she had trained as a nurse in Invercargill, but I believe she'd been stationed or had been living in the UK.
That's correct, yes. So, in fact, she trained here in Invercargill, and she participated in the First World War by going over to Belgium, and she worked with a surgeon in Belgium in sort of dealing with that Western Front, and she got captured. So she was taken prisoner. And in fact, what she did was she had to treat the Germans as well as, you know, her British and New Zealand counterparts, but she was very tenacious and managed to escape. So good on her.
I like Jessie.
Yes, I know. I think, you know, she didn't, whilst treating the Germans, she escaped and then she went back to the UK and she joined the Queen Alexandra's Imperial Military Nursing Service. And in fact, it's hard for us to imagine now when we talk about nurses being overworked, but she was in charge of a ward that had 126 patients. Which is phenomenal now. She worked in France. She went to Italy. And I do believe she came back to New Zealand eventually. But, you know, I haven't again pursued her further history. But phenomenal woman. And again, a lady we need to remember when we're talking about the tenacity of New Zealand nurses and those from Southland.
I do know that there is one particular nurse that has become a very special person for you, and she is Marion Brown. So I'd love you to tell me a little bit about Marion.
Yes, Marion Brown. She's a lady that I have huge admiration for. So Marion was actually born in Lesmahago in Scotland near Glasgow, and she was born on the 6th of October 1880, although the research around Marion's birth date does vary, and I'm sure all this was done in terms of people had to sort of forge their dates of birth to get into the military. So there are some records that say it was 1879. So she was born on the 6th of October, 1880. And she came to New Zealand with her parents and two sisters and two brothers. She travelled on the SS Jenny Redman. Landed in Otago. We're not quite sure when she made it to Southland, but she settled with her parents in Waimatuku and became, she worked in service in the Thornbury area where her mother worked as well. And in 1908, she moved to Riverton and she trained to become a nurse. So at that stage, she was quite old actually to start nursing. She'd have been around about 28, which is quite an old age in proportionally to train. She trained in Riverton. Now, during the family's time in Waimatuku, her parents went on to have another 10 children.
One of those big families.
And they were Presbyterians. They were very much sort of part of the community. So after training, again, Marion moved to Palmerston North. And I'd like to try and visualise that in 1908, she moved all the way to Palmerston North to become a nurse. And there's actually a memorial to Marion in the Palmerston North Hospital. She then looked after her sister, who was in Queenstown. Her sister was dying and did sadly die, leaving a husband and children. And then she moved to Waimate. And in Waimate, she was in charge of Dr. Barclay's clinic. And this was in around about 1914, 1915. And of course, at the outbreak of the First World War, she was working in Waimate and decided that she was going to enlist as a nurse in the military. She wasn't the only one from Dr. Barclay's, sir. It seemed like there was that sort of cohesiveness, which actually happened to me joining the army, that somebody else was joining and, oh, yeah, I'll join the army. So she joined the army. And she enlisted on the 6th of July 1915, so almost a year after the outbreak of World War I. Marion's records are quite interesting. They show that she was 5'9" tall, so she was bigger than the average female at the time. She weighed 11 stone, 5 pounds. She could expand her chest from a 34-inch to 37 inches, so obviously that was part of the medical at the time. She had a dark complexion. She wore glasses, which was quite unusual as well at the time, and she had dark brown hair. So she left New Zealand on the Mahino with 50 other nurses, and they headed for Egypt. So while she was in Egypt, she was based at a stationary hospital in Egypt. They then got the call to go somewhere. And of course, in those days, they didn't know where they were going. So they boarded a ship called the Marquette, Her Majesty's transport ship, the Marquette. And they went as a stationary hospital along with troops to an unknown destination. And at that time, there's a lot of evidence from the writings that this was an adventure. This was exciting. And they were heading off. It turned out they were heading off to Salonika. And they were only 15 minutes away from Salonika on this ship. And it was torpedoed by a German submarine.
And there was a large loss of life, I believe. There were something like 167 casualties. And there were 10 nurses in amongst that as well.
Tragically, it is the biggest loss of nurses' lives that New Zealand has known. So, yes, 10 nurses were killed by the sinking of the Marquette. The tragedy around the Marquette is it was a legitimate target, and it should never have had a hospital on board. So the fact that 10 nurses were killed, and the stories around Marion's death are really tragic, because they almost knew they were going to die. And she, and it's Isabel Clark, I think is her name, they were apparently just walked off the Marquette holding each other's hand to their fate, and they were both killed. Marion's was actually found in the water by, I think it was a French ship, and they did try to save her, but it was too late. So she is one of 10 nurses that was killed on the market.
And it brings it all back, you know. I mean, a lot of people lost their lives, but when you've made that connection with someone that you've got to know through your research, it becomes quite a sad event.
Very sad.
I think that there is a real legacy for these pioneer nurses, Sally. What's your view on that?
Oh, I think these women were, I like to visualise. I'm really a sort of visualiser, and I'm trying to think. There were no newspapers that were giving you current news. There was no social media. They actually were going halfway around the world, and they didn't actually know what they were going to. So there was this sense of adventure, and again, I think the resilience, and I'd like to use that word, resilience of these women to do something to contribute to the care of their men, is just, for me, it's really hard to imagine, because now we know what's happening, or we know what the media tells us. So, yeah.
I just want to finish with a piece from the Christchurch Star from November 1915. And in it, it says, "Those who scar the tree of life," a great thinker once said, "are remembered by the scars, but those who water its roots have nothing by which they may be known, but theirs is that tree." And I think that's a nice way to finish up with our pioneer nurses, because I think they were the water and that made their trees live.
Absolutely. And we must still remember them today.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks so much for joining me, Sally.
Thank you, Singer.
And thanks for joining me on Heritage South. Thanks for listening. The show is available as a podcast from the Radio Southland website, radiosouthland.org.nz. You can stream or download this episode. Just look for us on the Programs tab. Links can also be found on Facebook through Radio Southland's page, facebook.com/Radio Southland, and also on Heritage South at Heritage South NZ. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes, you can subscribe to this podcast on the Apple Podcast platform through the Access Media app or on Spotify.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.